Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this week's episode of Relationships Rule. Some people learn business in boardrooms. My guest today, Jared Harmon, learned it on the ice, behind a bar, and in a family restaurant at the age of 12. Today, he leads the One Group Agency, a full-service digital marketing firm in Surrey, BC, that has held onto roughly 80% of its original clients for nearly a decade. And I think that's something to be very proud of. That kind of loyalty doesn't happen by accident. In this episode, Jared and I are going to talk about what sport, hospitality, and deep community roots actually teach you about leading people, and why the agencies, businesses, and leaders who last are almost always the ones who put relationships first. So welcome to the show, Jared.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
My pleasure too. So I know you, and I remember your family's restaurant, Mr. Mike's, right? Yeah, when I was a kid. Yeah. And you started working in your family's restaurants when you were 12.
Yeah.
What did that early experience teach you about people that you can still carry with you, that you do still carry with you today, if anything?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting when you're, 12 years old and I didn't work for Mr. Mike's. We had Mr. Mike's and the Sirloiner brand. We had the two brands, and I started at the Sirloiner on Granville Island, which is like a big kind of, market tourist spot right in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Being pretty young, and I was living in a suburb of the city, so not a ton of time in the big city, and coming down and getting to experience all different kind of walks of life and different people from different places because of the tourism part too. It wasn't just, local folks, obviously. And you just get a really quick lesson in how different people, act and operate and have different personalities, and it's also a good lesson in customer service in terms of just, one thing in the restaurant world is you kind of always have to eat crow a little bit, and customer is always right, especially back in those days. And it was a slightly different mentality. So it was a really good intro to, the world of, getting along in professional circumstances, despite, whatever those situations may look like.
Yeah. I know that's funny that you said that, like it's different today, but common courtesies and showing that you care in those service-based industries are still so important. They really are. And if you learn them young, they stay with you. So I think that's really good. I know also that, your world, you spent your years, spent years in sports, I think hockey in particular, broadcasting, operating venues, hockey marketing, junior hockey marketing. When you look back, what did that world give you that a traditional business education simply could not?
I think the most interesting and maybe most valuable thing for me was, working in junior hockey, and it's changed a little bit, but not much. You wear 15 hats, right? Like, at different times I was responsible for the volunteers or the billets or the, obviously the sponsor relationships, game night activations, all those types of things. And so, someone who grew up really loving sports and wanting to be a part of it, it was awesome to be able to take in so many different facets of like what goes into a game or event night. And it allowed me to connect. Again, it's like similar to the restaurant, like different types and different parts of the community as well, right? Like you're not just dealing with the corporate people, you're dealing, like the volunteer base in junior hockey is a very different demographic. The billet base is a very different demographic. And then it also taught me some really, interesting elements of just business. Like we had a souvenir shop that we had to run, and we had to pick out the merchandise and price it, and there's so many different facets. And so, for a while there, actually, like I almost didn't leave because I just didn't know what part I wanted to focus on, if that makes sense. I originally got the job to do play-by-play, which is really what I wanted to do. But, after spending a few years in it, I realized that there is way more opportunity and way more interesting, job potential outside of the play-by-play, and that's where I ended up in marketing.
So tell me, I'm guessing that, I don't know, did you go to college, university?
I did. I went to the University of British Columbia.
You did. Yeah, so did I. Yay. But did you go there for business? Did you go there for sports? I mean, did we have sports management here? That kind of thing?
Yeah, I think they did, but no, I went there for psychology.
Okay. Oh.
But to be totally honest, like I went there because I went to a private school growing up, so it was just kind of like the natural, like it was the everybody next step after grade 12 was to go to
Yeah.
university. I think like 40 odd kids from my grad class went to UBC the following year.
Yeah.
So I didn't really go there with any intention, to be honest.
I get it. I totally get it.
And I had a great experience, some of the best years of my life for sure.
Yeah.
And psychology just seemed, somewhat interesting. When I was younger, I had an interest in maybe getting into sports psychology or criminology of some kind. So the
Sure.
psychology made sense, and that's really
Yeah.
why I pursued it. But no training in broadcast or
Yeah.
marketing. Yeah, none.
Yeah, no, that's cool though. It's funny because for me as a female, it was yes, you go to high school. I was in West Vancouver and everybody went to university after high school. And but it was also to find a husband.
Fair enough. Yeah,
Right? Yeah, I know. Weird. Anyway, didn't work. But so there's a particular kind of accountability that comes from live sport. No hiding, no replays. The result is what it is, just like yesterday in that soccer game, yeah? How has that shaped the way you lead your team at one group?
I think it did a lot for me in the sense of like learning that, panic and reactive thinking is never beneficial to anybody. I took me a few years to get to this point, but I used to kind of have the mantra when I was at the Langley Event Center of, like they're going to play the game with or without us. We had responsibilities, obviously, but at the end of the day, like if we missed, an item on the checklist or, the pregame prep thing or whatever, it didn't mean that the game wasn't going to happen. Like they were going to play. It was, what we did around that game that made sense. And so that really allowed me to learn how to like, take a breath, calm down, even when things get tough and try to analyze the situation before I react or respond to it. And then, in terms of how that translates now with the team at the agency, it's the same kind of mentality. Like, bad things are going to happen or, not necessarily bad, but like unexpected things are going to happen. You can't prevent everything. You can be the most prepared person in the world. And you can't control every aspect. And so when those things come up, whether it's something as big as losing a client, or whether it's just, something goes wrong on a client account or whatever the case may be. It really taught me to just, like I said, take a breath, calm down, look at what the best route forward is, and then make a decision based on trying to be the most effective.
So I think what really interests me is that, as I mentioned in the intro, that roughly 80% of your original clients, you've maintained those for 9 years, nearly 9 years. Most agencies would consider that remarkable. I think it's remarkable just from a people perspective because today everything is a blip, right? It goes by so quickly and we're not as loyal as we were in, at least I'm always loyal. I'm that kind of person. But I grew up, I don't know, it's always like I want the label that I'm used to. I want the people around that I'm used to. And it isn't the same anymore. So I think, though, that that is very impressive. And what would you say is actually behind that?
A lot of bribes. No, I think it's just really focusing on the relationships. I mean, I remember we were doing work for a company in LA that they had locations in LA, but the ownership was in Vancouver. So they and like long-term relationships with the senior management group and the ownership. And so they trusted us to go down there and handle their accounts down there. There were some challenges that went with that because I think it was our first client that was like out of market, and we just weren't really set up to execute as efficiently as I would say I would want to in that environment. And
Meaning because it was in the US, not in Vancouver, in your
yeah,
backyard.
we hadn't, like all of our clients at that point were local. So we were used to being able to like drive to the location to grab content and just do things that were pretty straightforward in terms of executing. So now all of a sudden, there's a lot more planning that I had to go into the travel side of things and the strategy of like what we were going to do for them and all those different elements that go along with going to, never mind a different country, even just going to like a different city or province or state, right? So, and I remember we had a couple challenges early on, and I remember saying to their, president of operations, who is a friend too, and just saying, look, like, I don't, I've never once believed we're like the best at what we do. I think we're up there, obviously. I think we're really good at what we do. But I said, what I can do and say with confidence is that we will always do our best for you. And I still, use that kind of mentality and approach when trying to pitch new clients is, like the reality of it is there's a lot of really good, firms out there. There's a lot of really good freelancers out there. There's a lot of really talented people. And like, as talented as I know our team is, like, you're talking, slivers that separate, in a lot of those different categories. And so, but, the ability to, answer the phone on the weekend when something is needed, or, have, I don't say not have boundaries, but like, have reasonable boundaries that also appreciate and respect the fact of what our clients are trying to accomplish has gone a long way. And I think I might have told you this when we first talked, like one of the things when I was working for the hockey team, and I was, selling rink boards and whatnot and ads to sponsors was like, that type of sales, like it's really hard to, prove ROI for your clients. And I got to the point where I was like, I think these people are only renewing their advertising packages because they just don't want to, I was 23, 24 at the time. They don't want to put me in a bad spot because I had built a relationship and a rapport with them. And I think there's a lot that can be said for that, and I think, I was fortunate to, my dad was in sales. So like, I watched him with his relationships. My grandfather was in PR and sales, and same kind of things. I was able to learn from that generation and see how much those friendships and relationships and that mutual respect that they had with their clients and their customers meant for them in terms of that long-term development and success.
Yeah, it's in the blood for sure. Definitely. My next question sort of speaks to this a little bit, but a lot of agencies talk about being relationship focused, but the behavior doesn't always match the language. So you talked about, already being genuinely available and responsive as much as possible, of course. And I assume teach your team at the agency to be the same, even on a Friday night when they're about to leave the office and the phone rings, kind of thing. But is it, well, this is a sideline question. The team that you have at the one group, have they been with you a long time? Are they as But have they bought into the same thing that comes naturally to you? Because that's where it gets difficult, I think.
And to be fair, like one thing I learned too, being, having the opportunity to be in, leadership or pseudo leadership roles from an early age, like, I was, one of, there's two of us that ran the Langley Event Center when I got that job when I was like 27, so I was pretty young. And but you learn that like you can't expect everybody to have the same mentality or philosophy as you do. And so in saying that, like you've got to create some boundaries that are acceptable. And I mean, the reality of it is, like, not to sound like an old guy, but like the younger generation doesn't necessarily have those same, same ideas. So, but what I think what I've focused more on is helping the team understand, what it's like on the other side of the equation for our clients. And like in some cases we have, people who are no different than me, like small business owners who, they're putting food on the table for their families with whatever businesses they have. And so even though it might not seem like a big deal to us, on Friday night when a social media post doesn't go out for that client, it's like that's their lifeline, like that's their livelihood. So it does matter. And so I think it's just really about trying to help the team understand what it's like to be in that situation. I mean, the other thing too is like it's understandable if the team looks at me and say, well, yeah, like it's your business, like you're gonna answer the phone on a Friday night. Like I get that and I appreciate that. And I don't necessarily as much as in like an ideal world to be like, yeah, I want them all to care and love the business as much as I do, but that's not reality, right? So I think helping them understand like where those limits and boundaries are. And I do think, you know, like the policy that we have is that, you know, if a client contacts you at, you know, whatever time and it's an emergency, then, you know, we need to at least make sure someone responds to them, whether that's person who got the email or the phone call, or whether that's them passing it off to the team. And if they're not going to be available, you know, we actually ask our staff to put it in, even if it's like a Tuesday night at 5:30, they know that they're, you know, they're going out that night and they won't be able to respond, put in an out of office response on just so that that client knows, okay, like I can't get a hold of Jared, but I can get a hold of Matt. And so I think it's more about that. Like, I don't want to create this expectation where the team has to answer the phone or the email no matter what. But there's certain things that do justify it. And like those people are trusting us with their brands and, you know, spending their money with us. And there's a certain responsibility that comes with that.
Definitely. So I know that you still maintain a lot of community involvement. You probably know a lot of people. I know if we talked about it, we know a lot of people in common. And do you think that community involvement makes you a better business leader, or is it more that it keeps you grounded as a person, or are they the same thing for you? Or do you need one to counterbalance the hard work in the other? You know what I mean?
I think they're probably one and the same in a lot of ways. Like I've always believed, you know, never, you know, you never burn a bridge, right? And you know, and try to be, I don't know if humble's the right word when it comes to, I mean, that you're inevitably going to have like disagreements and, you know, different philosophies in some people, but at the same time, it just because you don't agree, there's things that can be learned, you know, in those situations and perspectives that could be learned. And those, you know, if you're doing your job as like a leader, to go back to the question, I think it's valuable to always try to understand those parts of the equation. That being said, I think, you know, and I do think, you know, kind of cliche, but like the always learning piece is important too. So when you are able to surround yourself with other people in the community, there's opportunities to learn that way. But I, you know, I also think it's important to try to be involved and give back and like have a presence and you know, not just, I'll say take, 'cause like we're, you know, we're providing services, but like it's, you know, it shouldn't always be transactional, right? And
Right,
so,
and I'm coming to that, so that's good. So, do you think though that, like, for me, when I started out on my own, I didn't know anything about business. I'd been a teacher, so I mean, what did I know? I didn't even know how to do a resume to go out on, you know, get another job. But one thing that I knew early on was that it was, for me, it was all about people, and the more people that I built relationships with in the business community and networked with and got to know and who got to know me, that helped me grow as a person, but also grow in the business community. Oh, you should talk to Janice. She can help you with that. Do you feel that that's part of what you have built as well? Because, like, does your business come from referral a lot?
yeah, we like our almost all of our growth has been entirely organic. You know, it's just you know, like great example, like this morning I had a call with a person who owns a PR firm, and they reached out. Like, so despite working in similar worlds for a long time, we had never met. We got connected about a year ago, and just we needed some PR help with something. And so, you know, and just, you know, just being like a normal human being about the relationship, and just being like, you know, like, you know, how's your kids, like that kind of stuff. And just, you know, now we get thought of for when they have an opportunity to like co-bid on something or whatever the case may be. So yeah, I think, you know, it's like anything, like there's always going to be more value in, you know, the warm lead as opposed to the cold lead. And so when there's pre-established trust, even if it's indirect, like I think that just makes people feel better about where they spend their money, or they, or, you know, maybe more importantly than the money is trust their brand, right? If they know, you know, if a friend of a friend has said, hey, like, you know, one group is trustworthy, they're going to work hard for you, whatever the positive feedback is, it's just an easier call to make than like, you know, cold calling for agencies and looking for quotes, right? And so I think that that can go a long way. And I think it's important to always, as a business owner in person, like trying to like, you know, keep that considered. And I think one of the things that I'm probably most proud about with the team that we've built is, despite, generational differences and all that kind of stuff, like we have, like it is a group of like-minded people. Like, I'm really comfortable and confident in saying that, like, they're all really good people. And in a small company like ours, should be easy to say, but I think sometimes it's taken for granted.
Well, I think that's very special, and I think it takes a lot of work to build that, and it come and I think that people always look to the top to see, how that has been, right? Because you're the face of it for sure. So let's talk about digital marketing. You work in digital marketing, which can feel like a very transactional space. Impressions, clicks, conversions, that ROI thing, is it working? It's really nebulous in some cases, I think, to, or if that's the wrong word, but it's really it can be difficult to pinpoint what got the ROI or not. So how, and for me, like, I work in LinkedIn. I don't deal in the content side very much because I'm about building relationships with people. And yes, I have to have a presence, so I have to put up some content. But things have changed a lot in the LinkedIn front recently as well. But I want to ask you though, how do you keep the human side of the work visible when everything is being measured? Like, how do you, I don't know, it's like, do clients know what they're asking for? Do they know what makes, they're relying on you, I think, more than anybody, to your company when they come to you to say, well, I haven't had any success with my content marketing. I need your help. What can you do for me? Like, where it's, to me, it's very, like I said, nebulous, esoteric. It's like you don't know.
Yeah, I think, for us, we always try to, sorry, to answer your question, to clients, some clients do, some clients don't. Some clients come to us and they have like a pretty clear picture and vision of what they want and how they want to get there. And, a lot of times those are the clients are the easy ones, in the sense that, like, it's, like for us, like executing a plan is probably the easiest thing. Like when somebody comes to us with like, hey, this is, A to Z here, what we want to do. Okay, cool. We just go do it. Like, that's easy.
Well, yeah, but hang on a second. If it's sometimes when people say they know what they want, it isn't necessarily what they need. So
Yeah, and we do. I always push the team and say, hey, like, it's okay to push back. Like, if a client's proposing a strategy that we like think is just not going to work, like, I think we owe it to them to say, like, hey, like, I get that you want this, but here's what I think you should do and why. And I think the why is crucial. Like, you
Yes.
can't say, like, hey, like, we're the agency, we know better. This is what you do. Like, it's like, based on experience A, B, C, D, like, we think you should do this. And it's such a common conversation for us in the office, because, especially like the content team, who have very specific creative ideas and things like that. Like, sometimes clients will come to them with their own ideas, and our team will be like, oh, like, that's like, but like, at the end of the day, it's the client's money, client's idea, they want to do it. Because of that, though, it is why I push to say to the team, like, hey, like, you need to, if there's a flag here for whatever reason, or something that you're worried won't work, or whatever the case may be, you need to flag that. Because if you're sitting there watching the client go down this path and you know that it's not going to end well, and then we do it, we execute it, it's one thing if we tell them that we think we can go down the other path and they still choose to go down that path. Well, at least, not that we want to say we told you so, but at least we can say, hey, like, we tried to, present another idea for you. You didn't like it, which is fine. So we executed what you wanted. So yeah, we try to have that conversation with the clients. But that the same breath, there are a lot of clients who come to us and just say, hey, like, you guys are the experts in ABCD. So, what do you think? And we obviously still collaborate with them, and it's not like we just, take their accounts and run with them. I think the big variable there are the businesses that like have dedicated marketing people, or those who don't, like, because, I would say most of the time when you're talking to clients who have marketing people on the team, like, they do have a good understanding and like a solid base of like who their audience should be and what they want. The clients who don't have the ability to like live in their marketing world all the time because they don't have a dedicated team or whatever, those are the ones that like usually are more open to like letting us just like run
relevant.
the playbook
Yeah.
and like use what we know and what we understand to optimize their efforts.
Okay, so where do you operate mostly? Are you on all of the social media? Do you work in all the social media platforms, or do your people have different focuses? Obviously, depending on where the company that you're working with, where their audience is, or but do you have preferences? Do you what's working these days? Like,
It depends on the client, right?
yeah.
So, like, it depends on the audience you're at, maybe less on the client. It depends on the client and the audience they're after, right? Like, there's, in a perfect world, the ability to, if you're a brand or a product or a service that's trying to hit multiple different demographics, like being everywhere is, preferential. But it's only preferential if you could do all the platforms well and you have
Yeah, it's
budget.
tough to do that.
Like, my first comment is always like, there's no harm done in being on every platform, right? Like, even if your audience isn't on, X or isn't on Facebook, if you're already creating content for Instagram and TikTok, like it's not going to like hurt you to also publish those pieces, those assets in the other channels. But it really comes down to like where you focus the content more so than where you publish it, if that makes sense.
You mean the topics that you focus on? Is that what you mean?
No, I mean how the copy's written or how the if it's video, like how it's optimized. Like, is it op like the video might be optimized for TikTok, but you still publish it on X even just to get it out there, but you're not spending time and money, recreating the content so
Got
it's
it.
optimized for both platforms.
Well, that may work with some of them, but do you ever work on LinkedIn, with LinkedIn?
Yeah, we do quite a bit. Depending on the client. Like, if it's B2B, like that's
Yeah.
this one. And I think the big challenge with LinkedIn is, and at least what we're seeing is the success of, it's become more about individual content as opposed to business content. Now that content can be repurposed for the business. The biggest challenge we have there is like a lot of people don't want to create the individual content. It's not comfortable for everybody, right? So
Correct.
that can be hard at times. And the style of copy and whatnot that is successful isn't, I don't say it's not natural, but it's not natural for everybody, right? And so that's where it can be a challenge to get people comfortable in that space.
Well, it's actually good to hear you say that, because I have heard it with other people I've talked to that, we'll just put it across all platforms, including LinkedIn. And LinkedIn is a different animal and doesn't take that well, right? So it has to be done differently, and that's good to hear. But I do find it frustrating to hear to think that you can just put it out on everything, because it's too hard to manage,
No, and when I say that, I mean, if you're putting it on everywhere, like in a ideally you are customizing the content
I
for the
understand.
channels. Yeah, like you don't want to just have, in a perfect world, you don't want to have like one caption, one image, and one strategy that you just paste across each platform. Some people do that. I don't
I
think
know.
it's always going to hurt necessarily. That's your only option, be it budget or time. Better than not having, anything there, but I think you gotta think it through more than that for sure.
So, just curious, with the clients that you have, and you probably have different levels of service, but the full-blown clients, they do, you do all their social media content, and you do their I do you do other is it all digital that you do, like video and content?
We have produced content for traditional platforms like TV and whatnot. Because I mean, it's funny because like that world has changed so much too. There was a time where like you could use the tools that we use now to create like TV commercials, right? But that's become a lot easier to do. So we do some of that at times. Not a ton, but yeah, we will do it if needed, or even audio stuff if necessary.
Okay. So when people trust you and you do the work for them, are there different levels of involvement or engagement from the client? Do they all go and they write their own responses and things like that to content that's put out there?
Yeah, again, depend on the resources they have for sure. We have packages that include us handling that for them and packages that don't. And it just, again, it just depends. Like, We're usually trying to be pretty transparent with clients around, where we're best served and not best served, and on the engagement end, and responding to their inboxes or their comments online. It's totally doable. We'll do a good job, all that kind of stuff. But if you have someone in the office who understands the business at a much higher level, that's going to be more effective than us doing it for you. And so
Yes.
it's again, that conversation usually is a like, hey, like option A is we do this, and it's, the responses are a little bit more generic, or sometimes we have to message you to find out the response, whatever. Therefore, they're a little bit slower, but it's better than not doing anything.
Of course, yeah.
Or if you have someone internally, an admin person or a marketing person or just somebody who has the capacity to do that, you're going to get better results doing it yourself.
And it must be interesting because I find digital media so frustrating because it's like throwing mud at the wall. I mean, you have to, I don't know, on LinkedIn lately, there's been some talk about instead of having a plan, instead of having a 3-month content calendar with the pillars that you use and you rotate, which is what I try to do, but I don't do a great job on it. But now it's about, forget that. Just post something personal, something real, something that, isn't planned out. You're sitting waiting for a doctor's appointment and you write a post and you stick it up there. And, so it's changing all the time.
I think one of the things we always tell people these days is don't overthink it. Social media has got such a short, that one post, the shelf life is nothing, right? So I'll assume that nobody's planning on posting anything offensive or derogatory. So it's you really have nothing to lose if you to trying things out. You never know what's going to stick. We had a client the other day that posted this really mundane looking World Cup schedule. It was easy to read and easy to follow. I wouldn't even say that they're a place that people are going to go to watch the games. And they had something like 33,000 people engage with it, which is 32,000 more than ever is engaged with anything, right? And it's funny. My buddy who runs the restaurant texted me and said, "Why do you think this is?" I'm like, "This is just social media, man. Like, this is just the weird things that happen for no apparent
Apparent
reason."
reason, yeah.
And so, I can't really answer that. I don't know what it is, but the simplest way to answer it would be somebody randomly caught on to it and shared it with their network,
Yeah.
that and it just kind of caught fire, down that path. And
What platform was that on?
Instagram.
Yeah, okay. Interesting.
So it just, and like I said, they're just like they're, I could stare at that post all day and not have any idea why it worked the way it did. But those things happen. Like that's the world, right?
Yeah, exactly. So as we wind down here, I want to get your opinion. If someone is early in their career and they're watching how you've built your business and your life, what's the one thing that you would want them to understand about why relationships are not just a nice idea? They are an actual strategy.
I mean, you just never, you're always going to need help and guidance and mentorship in some way. And I think it's naive to think about it any differently. And I think, by building a solid network of people that you can trust and that can trust you, you're just always in a better position to get the, the feed, whether it's feedback, good or bad, or help and advice that you need to be successful. The amount of times I've called a buddy or that hey, what do you do when you're in this situation? Or what do you think about this? It's nice to have, it's not just nice, actually, it's important to have those sounding boards that aren't directly connected to your day-to-day in terms of how you manage, your company and your business. And I think it'll go a long way. And from a marketing perspective, it's crucial too, because I think one of the, and we might have chatted about this before, but looking at your business and your brand from a different perspective than your own, one that's not so emotionally connected to it, can help a lot, right? And I think so, again, having that network and that those relationships, and again, the key word there is trust, right? People that you can trust that will be honest and sincere with you, and know that, you'll do the same for them.
It's funny because there's also some people that you feel quite quickly that you can pick up the phone and call, or God forbid, the answer, but I still have an intent to do that sometimes. But I felt that with you right away when we started talking, that I felt like, and I think it's so cool to have that sense of, you know, I think I want to talk to you again about such and such. And I would feel okay doing that. I wouldn't feel that you were still just a stranger, or, you know, I interviewed you on my podcast and, you know, I do though. And that's important. And I think that's a real, feather in your cap, I guess, to use an old fashioned term, in the sense that, you know, you have built your business on people and on relationships, and you learned it from a young age, and you're using it in your business today. And to me, that's the best capital in the world, is people, is relationships with people. And as you said, trust. So I hope that you feel the same way, because I feel like I want to talk to you further. So thanks.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, it's really cool. I think I mentioned we've been trying to do some, you know, PR efforts to grow the brand a bit. And like, you know, I think the interesting part for me is like getting to meet all these different people and, you know, obviously like yourself, and it's weird. Like we had the pre-call and it just now, you know, feels like, you know, the person right away and I can just have a conversation with them, which makes it a lot easier for everybody and hopefully more enjoyable for anybody who's listening.
Yeah, I hope so too. For me, it's better. I can do it on the fly, but it doesn't feel the same to me. I have to get a little deeper first. So, and so it does make me actually want to ask you about all those pictures behind you.
Yeah.
Special people, tell me.
Yeah, just so it's funny. I saw it on a podcast like 5 or 6 years ago, and it was somebody on there, and they had a bunch of, it was a hip hop artist, and he had a bunch of hip hop artists that he respected and looked up to. And so I remember saying to myself, I thought it looked really cool. And I'm like, if I ever have an office that has a wall behind me, I want to do this. And so I just threw up pictures of, you know, people that I, you know, look up to in a business sense, or, you know, I've admired, you know, like athletes or musicians.
Okay. So let me see if I can guess any of them, but also are they caricatures that you had done or painted?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Yep. I'm thinking that's Gary Vaynerchuk behind you.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. And then over on the left is a hockey player, I'm thinking, and I'm not real good with them, but
Trevor Linden.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah. Well, it's old, so it's hard. Like he was young, so I don't.
He's young then, yeah. He's got a little bit more gray these days.
Yeah, but that's cool. Okay, and who's the one next to him?
Dr. Dre.
Okay, also you in the youth. Okay, but the one that I really recognized was, okay, and I think is Steve Jobs. Is that Steve Jobs? And I don't know who the girl or the woman is.
Martha Stewart.
Fantastic, and I can't see the other two there.
The other one's The Rock and Jay-Z.
Love it. Okay. Yeah. So that says a lot too, that, you know, that you, when you talk Martha Stewart, when you talk Gary Vaynerchuk, you kind of know. When you talk Trevor Linden, that's a local, hockey hero, but was also an international hockey hero. So very cool. Thanks for sharing that. I like that.
Yeah, of course. Great icebreaker too, when people come into the office.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. So thank you for being here. Thank you for being part of Relationships Rule. And how can people find you? And I'll put it in the show notes, of course. The One Group. Go ahead.
Yeah, onegroupagency.ca is probably the best place. And then you can grab links to my LinkedIn there, or Instagram, or whatever. You know, pretty open book. Happy to always have people reach out, even if it's looking for a few minutes of advice or thoughts. So
that's important. That's great. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And just to wrap up, I think that there's a good reminder here that the best business lessons are rarely learned in a classroom. They come from showing up for your team, for your clients, your community, and the people who trusted you early on. That to me is the through line in everything you've built, and I'm grateful that you brought it here today. To everyone listening, if this episode sparked something for you, share it with someone who needs to hear it. And if you want to connect with Jared, the information will be in the show notes. And until then, remember that the relationships that you build today are the business you'll have tomorrow. And remember that to stay connected and be remembered. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener, because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.